It's the Pacific Rim Pro Wrestling Podcast, the podcast that takes you from Seattle. Actually, I'm not in Tokyo this time. I'm in Seattle all the way to Tokyo across the Pacific Ocean, the Pacific Rim. That's where we find Japan's leading authority, author, and historian, Fumi Saito. How are you? How are you doing, Fumi?
Hello from Tokyo. Yep. You're back in Seattle now.
And you are in your apartment. And I need to let everybody know, we've talked about it a little bit, but I've been sick. I haven't had a chance yet, but I have video of you walking around your apartment.
And I am afraid what you're going to do with it.
What would I do with it?
Oh, the show wrestling fans, you know how crazy my place is.
No, I don't think it's crazy. You've got a lot of your life's work there, and that's really cool. But no, I think it's kind of a neat thing, I think. I haven't seen the video completely yet, but it's okay. You walking around talking about various parts of your life and your work and just other things. I think it's pretty interesting and, you know, really the main reason people want to see it, Kiki. So,
Okay. Yeah, for the first time. Yeah, he's here.
And then also I have audio and video of you and Dave on stage at TotoCon doing the Q&A.
Okay. Oh, you taped that too? Yep. Yeah, he's saying hello to everybody.
By the way, I do want to point out to people, Kiki does just randomly meow like that. That's not Fumi enticing the cat at all. That's just what Kiki does.
Oh, no. He comes in and he say hello and he talks a lot.
Yeah, he talks
a lot. He does. You saw it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he seemingly has something to say.
Yeah, it looks that way.
Anyway, so there's extra Fumi content coming to The Observer, but today we wanted to do a special episode and talk about, is it Kazuo Sakurada?
Yeah, real name Kazuo Sakurada, but better known as Kendo Narasaki.
I had him in Portland. He came through Portland. We could talk about that later.
Right. Yeah, he did that, yeah.
But when I was a kid,
pretty much a lot of yeah, territories. What year was that?
85, 84, 85.
Oh, okay.
If I were to guess, I don't know, but I would guess Billy Jack probably got him in because they feuded in Florida and things, I would imagine.
Ah, okay. Yeah, because he told me that the Kendo Narasaki told me, well, there's only 12 guys in there. It's like all together in Oregon.
Yeah.
You know? So, so there were days. The 12 guys will make up one territory, but there's a show all year round, you know?
Yeah, so, I was actually kind of amazed that we had a star the size of Kendo Narasaki in Portland. I was like, is this a good sign or is this a bad sign that things are so bad he's willing to work Portland?
Oh, no, he was willing to go all kinds of territories, you know? So we'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
But he... Yeah, he was 71. He passed away a couple of days ago. Yeah,
I just want to mention. As a matter of, he spent a lot of time in Japan too, not just America.
Yeah, not just America, but he was. That's why he. I'm not saying he was a major, huge superstar headliner. He was a star, of course, but he had more interesting, long career, and we can learn a lot from it. You know, yeah, that's what I'm saying. He worked both. He studied. With JWA, they went under and was merged into Giant Baba's Old Japan Pro Wrestling when he was young. Then he was sent to America, but when he came back in 85, he joined New Japan. Then he worked places like SWS, the spin-off of SWS. It's NOW. You can call it now, but it's NOW, is a network of wrestling, was the name of the company. And the beginning of Big Japan Pro Wrestling, SPWF, the IWA Japan, he even worked the tour with Onita for FMW. And he pretty much worked, you know, every promotion, and he had his hands on in this initial, tours and all those things. And So he played a lot of important roles that we haven't really covered, you know?
You would know better. I've just, to keep up with you, because you lived in and you're the expert, I've got his Wikipedia page open. Is it true he had debuted against Kim Duck? Is that true?
Right. It was, I believe it was July or June or July of 1971. against Masanori Toguchi. Then Masanori Toguchi, later Taiga Chanli, Kim Dak, and all these different names.
Yeah,
he started out as a sumo wrestler at the age of 15 back in 1964. And he was a sumo wrestler for about 5 years. And after 1971 March sumo tournament, he pretty much quit or escaped or ran away from sumo dojo and went into JWA wrestling dojo. And just under 3 months training, he debuted in that summer of 1971 against yet another former sumo wrestler, Toguchi.
He has a much more storied career, I think, than people ever realized.
Right. So he was sumo wrestler between age 15 to 19. And then went into JWA, defunct JWA, Nippon Pro Wrestling Company, when Baba and Inoki were still together. And he debuted there. And JWA, okay, after Giant Baba left the company in formed All Japan. And 6 months after that, well, Giant Baba took TV with him and old JWA company went under rather quickly. Then Sakurada and nine other guys merged to Giant Baba's All Japan Pro Wrestling. So he was under All Japan Pro Wrestling until basically 1976. And 1964 was the year Sakurada and Tenryu, Genichiro Tenryu, started out as a sumo wrestler around the same time. That's interesting, that both Tenryu and Sakurada started as a sumo wrestler in teenage, just the same year, already a superstar sumo wrestler, turned into a pro wrestler in summer of 1976. And Tenryu was sent to Amarillo, Texas to train and debut over there and come back as a star like 6 months later. Giant Baba assigned Sakurada to go with him. That's the beginning of what I call Tenryu and Sakurada became like a side A and side B of Vinyl Record. Are you with me?
Yeah, that's an interesting comparison. Explain.
Yeah, the reason that the Giant Baba sent Sakurada with Tenryu was that Tenryu still had this sumo hairdo, samurai hairdo. This has a big, samurai ponytail up on the top of your head. Tenryu kept that, until he debuted as a pro wrestler. But only selected sumo people can do the hairdo for him, And Baba asked him, "Are you able to do that hairdo for Tenryu while he's gone?" And then he said, "Yeah, I can do it." And that was, that's also a tale too, but more of a, myth, legend part. But he was sent to Amarillo with Tenryu. And Giant Baba wasn't really counting on Sakuraba to be, the star. The star was always Tenryu, Golden Rookie. And he was sent to train under the Funks. And he was brought back 6 months later to be a star right away. And Baba basically told Sakuraba that you can be in the stateside as long as you want to. And then basically see you later, right? Because I don't think Baba had much, plan for Sakurada. It was always Tenryu to be a star, right? But that's when the whole journey of Sakurada started. He became basically freelancer, like a free spirit person that... He went up to Calgary, and as a Mr. Sakurada and formed a tag team with Mr. Hito, Katsuji Adachi, another former sumo wrestler. They met again and they became famous tag team in Calgary, and they had their run, right? And even in 1978, he became big enough star that Mr. Sakurada challenged Harley Race for NWA title up in Edmonton, and that's a main event, right? Then he came back through a Calgary office booking through Mr. Hito, he came back and worked one tour with IWE, another defunct company, but he came back as a Japanese heel with jumping pile driver finish, and he went back to Calgary right away. Then following year,
quick question.
Yeah.
He's so iconic looking as Kendo Nagasaki, but in his Mr. Sakurada years, is he dressed in the stereotypical Japanese fashion with the,
yes,
the three-quarter length tights and that kind of thing?
Yes, yes, and even the tabi, like a Japanese samurai tabi shoes, you know, instead of wrestling boots.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Mr. Hito and Mr. Sakurada both had this very stereotypical Japanese style. Yes. Yeah. Three quarter down to your knees in black. Did not have Japan writing on it though. Only black. But he was still playing this very stereotypical Japanese heel style, you know, in the late '70s. Yes. Then when he came back to Japan, you know, for All Japan for a few tours, he was parts unknown mask guy, Dream Machine. You know? So he had another identity as a mask wrestler, Dream Machine. Then he went back to States again, Florida, the Dallas, the NWA Tri-State area, which became MSWA, the Bill Watts territory. He traveled, right? Then in 1980, he went to Dallas. In 81, Great Kabuki was doing the Great Kabuki gimmick. So he was his tag team partner under the mask, Chan Chain, if you remember.
Yeah, that name's familiar. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, Chan Chan. He was under mask from Singapore, parts unknown, Singapore, whatever. But he was like, you know, a mask guy standing right next to Great Kabuki. And then when he left Dallas and went to Florida in 82, that's when he adapted basically same Great Kabuki gimmick under Kendo Nagasaki name. You know, face paint, you know, that the martial arts, black pants, green mist blowing and a karate thrust kick, basically pretty similar to what Great Kabuki did, but he did that in different territory. You could do that because there were territories back then. You know?
Well, and also because there were territories, you could steal the name Kendo Nagasaki from England.
Yeah, he didn't really, I don't think he was him who stole it.
Yeah,
somebody from Florida, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Because Kendo Nagasaki, yes, we have to touch that. Because original Kendo Nagasaki was a British guy, and he was a superstar in Britain. That's why, you know, this ring name Kendo Nagasaki confused some people even yesterday. You know, no, he's not from Japan. He's from Britain, and he's not 71. He's 78. People are posting that on Facebook. Not realizing there were two Kendo Nagasaki. And we have to point that out. Yes, British Kendo Nagasaki was the original guy. But
and if you've never seen the British Kendo Nagasaki, go out of your way to see him on World of Sport. One of the great all-time characters in wrestling.
A real famous one.
Yeah, and he's fascinating. He's very interesting. So
there are quite a few same name people in between British wrestling and American wrestling, you know, because there were the guy in UK wrestling, there was a guy named Jack Dempsey. What? Right? It's like a boxing great from America, you know, but there was a wrestler, Jack Dempsey, in Britain. And also Steve Regal of America and Steve Regal from England. Now he's William Regal, but when William Regal was wrestling in England back home when he was really young, his name was Steve Regal, and he knew there was another Steve Regal in AWA too. So there's some confusion there, but yes, there were two Kendo Nagasakis. But we're talking about Sakurada today.
You know, you can clearly see that he got the inspiration from Great Kabuki, but as a kid seeing these magazines, I thought that Kendo Nagasaki's look was so striking. I didn't make
a connection. He shaved the top of the head?
Yeah, and just the makeup and his facial expressions and the samurai mask and everything. I thought he was
amazing. Yeah.
I preferred the optics, the look of the Kendo Nagasaki character versus the Great Kabuki character. But that's just me.
Yeah. Yeah, but the interesting thing is, though, Great Kabuki and Kendo Nagasaki, they didn't really make tag team in America. They were always in different places while they were there, you know? They will meet again in 90s in SWS ring. But anyways, so he almost, you know, originally Kazuo Sakuraba was sent to America, sent to Amarillo, Texas by Baba to attend Tenryu, you know? And after Tenryu went back to Japan to become a star, Sakuraba basically stayed in America and said, well, he's got his own, you know, just the path, you know. I mean, journeyman wrestler has kind of, you know, terrible connotation, but I mean, in nice way, you know, he really traveled around the world and he went pretty much every single territory there were, you know.
You know, yeah, after he became Kendo Nagasaki and went to Florida, he was a pretty big star. He was a nationwide star on some level.
Because Florida television had, you know, you could watch in New York too, you know? Yeah.
And the magazines all covered Florida.
Inside Wrestling, yeah, all the Aptor magazine covered, you know, a lot of Florida. And he was always in American magazine. In color photo, you saw, you know, when you were a little young, that, like you said, very striking, you know, yeah, look he had. And in 1985, that, it gets really political. Okay, in 1984, Riki Choshu and his group of 15 guys all left New Japan, right? To form Japan, you know, Japan Pro Wrestling at the time. Then that small group, not a small, but that new company joined with All Japan, and all the, you know, Choshu's 15 guy group worked with All Japan for 2 years, 85 and 86. And in the meantime, New Japan, you know, Choshu's group left and the original UWF guys left. So they lost about 30 wrestlers. They had a pretty skeleton, you know, crew. Just Inoki, Sakaguchi, Fujinami, and Kengo Kimura probably, you know. And that's when Sakaguchi got in contact with, you know, Kendo Nagasaki, and he got Sakuraba into New Japan, 1985. Then he became Rambo Sakurada for one tour. But it was almost an experiment, and that Rambo Sakurada character didn't do, you know, go so well that following tour, he was back as a Kendo Nagasaki character.
Okay.
Wait. And the same year.
Hang on one second.
Yeah.
What is Rambo? Was he based on the Sylvester Stallone character?
Kind of like that. You're talking 1985, you know?
That's crazy.
Yeah, I don't think he came up with that either, you know? But he needed that big heavyweight. See, 70s and 80s wrestlers, basically a lot taller than today's Japanese stars, right? You know, Sakurada naturally, what, the 6'3 and a half, 260-pound guy, even heavier sometimes. And New Japan with skeleton, you know, crew that they needed experienced heavyweight top Japanese guys, you know, and they took Sakurada and Shiro Koshinaka from All Japan and they added two new wrestlers. Are you with me?
Yeah. It's just kind of funny because, like I said, I saw him in Florida on the magazines, you know, with J.J. Dillon and I remember, you know, specifically because he was a Northwest guy, he feuded with Billy Jack Haynes when Billy was really hot in Florida and probably his biggest year as far as momentum in the sport.
Probably, yes. Yeah.
And like I said, he came and wrestled for a time in Portland. As a matter of fact, in 85, when Don Owen held his big spectacular, the 60th anniversary show at the Portland Memorial Coliseum in May of 85, Kendo Nagasaki played the big foreign heel on the show to Sergeant Slaughter.
Ah, okay. Very special.
So, yeah, I was always kind of amazed that Well, look at us. We've got a big national star, one of the guys that's in the magazines in Portland, because we didn't get those people too often.
Right, right. So he was always willing to travel and go into new territories, you know? And, yeah, so he was that kind of wrestler. In 85, you know, he joined New Japan, you know? He did not, they probably had a single match against Antonio Inoki, too. And Rambo Sakurada's idea was to make him babyface. It didn't really do well, you know? But he was back as Kendo Narasaki the following, you know, tour, and they got his Puerto Rico tag team partner, Mr. Pogo, with him, and he became regular tag team with New Japan for a while. And November 1985 to September 86, and you know, he comes back a year later and he becomes one of the top groups, you know, just the same formula they do today, right? They were doing that with, you know, Muto, to make Muto into a, you know, main event group, cluster group. And basically, Muto's first trip to Florida, those 1 year period, Kendo Narasaki was his tag team partner. And also he was like a babysitter of Muto. And also he always drove, you know. I went to visit Muto in, I believe, spring or summer of 1986. I did, you know, to do the interview and, you know, apartment photos and the show at the Tampa Armory. And the following morning, Tampa Sportatorium, small studio, they were taping the TV, you know, TV taping and interviews and stuff. I went to take pictures and all those things. Sakurada always volunteered to drive and took us to, you know, gym to do, you know, to do some photos, more interviews, and went to Japanese restaurant to eat, and took me to Tampa bar, you know, and so I saw Sakurada at this Tampa bar scene, and yeah, you know, those, you know, local bars, I'm sure it was like that in Oregon too. There's certain bars that wrestlers hang out, right?
Yeah, I believe there's always strip clubs.
Okay, and always
screwed. Joke.
Always, yeah, that too. But you know, local bars, you know, and then some certain wrestling fans, you know, always hanging out outside and all these things. And it was like a wrestling. It's almost just a part of the wrestling thing, you know. And I witnessed, you know, how they, you know, drink and all these things. And that was, well, Muto was young, pretty young then, but that was like Kendo Narasaki's prime time too, you know.
How fluent was Sakurada's English?
They spoke, you know, like Great Kabuki, Killer Khan, Masa Saito, Kendo Narasaki. They spoke similar American English in a way. Yeah, not so. Yeah, kind of fluent, but not correct grammars and vocabularies, you know. But they can get by, you know, and no obstacle to, you know, living as a wrestler. And so that they spoke, you know, almost broken English, but they're fluent enough and they can have conversation and strong accent, of course. Yeah.
Did you ever talk to Sakurada about this time in his career where he kind of became a national star in the United States? How did he see his time in Florida?
I don't think he saw himself as much of a star, or he didn't really have that kind of mentality, you know. This is what he does, and he enjoys it. And he had like a typical wrestler's lifestyle. You know, of course, you know, you work every night, those territorial days, you know, and you drive a lot. You go to bars almost every night. You meet girls too, you know, and this is what professional wrestler would do in the 70s and 80s. He had all that. The name I just mentioned, Killer Khan, Masa Saito, Great Kabuki, Kendo Narasaki, Mr. Hito for that matter, they all got green card, you know, and at one point they were planning on living in the States until he retired, you know. But one by one, they eventually came home too, you know. So there was a pattern there.
Sakurada liked living in the United States?
I think so. he lived in Dallas for a long time. Even when he was in work in other territories, he had a house in Dallas, you know? And because he was being in the talent in the booker for SWS and in early 90s, SWS and NOW, and he was helping to open Big Japan Pro Wrestling with Greg Kojika, another old friend of his. And he was sending people from, sending wrestlers from the stateside, you know, people like Manny Fernandez, Bob Orton, Cowboy Bob Orton, that quite a few wrestlers from Dallas area, or even Booker T and Stevie Ray before they were famous, you know, before they were Harlem Heat. They were working for Dallas group GWF after World Class, if you remember.
As the Ebony Experience.
Right, right. But the Ebony Experience didn't quite, you know, hit it in Japanese market. So Sakurada made Booker and Stevie Ray into a kind of tip, cliche, but block bombers.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, but those two worked. Alex Porter, the quite a few GWF wrestlers were sent to Japan by Sakurada. But you know, those days.
Speaking of stereotypes, the Kendo Nagasaki character, obviously, you know, based on a lot of Asian mysticism and being a ninja and all of those type of stereotypes.
Kendo American, stick and the Kendo costume, samurai get up and all that.
How do you tailor the Kendo Nagasaki character in Japan?
In Japan? Much like, there was the same question was raised when Great Kabuki was brought back to All Japan as a, you know, one of the main event guy. He was treated as a Japanese wrestler who made big stardom in America. So he brought that success story back to Japan. So he did not change costume or gimmick or whatever he does. And Great Kabuki, in Great Kabuki's case, there were like NWA title match in All Japan Ring, you know, Ric Flair against Great Kabuki or something like that. So it was okay that that was a character that made famous in America. So no stereotype, this connotation was really touched upon. More of a, it's like a ninja gimmick, Kabuki gimmick, all these, you know, not quite stereotype, like a negative connotation. Kendo Nagasaki the same way. He worked heel side, you know, Kendo Nagasaki and Mr. Pogo as it is, you know, they looked exactly the same way they worked in Puerto Rico. And they were brought back. It's like a bad guys from Puerto Rico and they're Japanese, but they work heel side, you know? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally makes sense.
Yeah, so it was nothing negative about it. Everybody knew that, all the wrestling fans knew that they were a very successful star in America and Puerto Rico and Canada. So pretty much being treated as the star, you know, Japanese wrestler who went to States and made it big over there and came back as he is. And he did not have to change it back to... That's probably the reason that the Rambo Sakurada character didn't do too well, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, you talked about, I love the analogy of the A and B side. When he came back, do you think that, is he seen as someone who did much better than people expected?
Sakurada?
Yeah.
Yeah, because he basically, he was largely forgotten by regular TV audience. See, reading-oriented pro wrestling fans will read about him in wrestling magazine. Yeah, Kendo Nagasaki's a star over there. But those things were not really mentioned in All Japan Pro Wrestling TV shows, you know? In the meantime, you watch Giant Baba, Jumbo Tsuruta, and Genichiro Tenryu against American top stars, you know, every week, and he was largely forgotten. And when Sakurada was brought back to Old Japan, you know, a few tours, he worked as Dream Machine, the mask guy, you know. Then a lot of people knew that was Sakurada, but they did not say much on television. He was another big heel mask guy, you know, Japanese or American. That was a Dream Machine.
He worked Memphis. Yeah. Do you know if that Dream Machine name was inspired by Troy Graham?
Kendo Narasaki too, Dream Machine too, and names were already there. And somebody, what's the name? It's like somebody always came up ring name for him, or even a little bit later on when he was back in WCW, like in mid 90s as a Dragon Master or something. That was Sakurada too.
Yeah.
But he had a name, Dragon Master. I don't think he came up with his name. Promoters, probably because he was a good worker, that the promoter would name him and give him some gimmick because he needed to be in the ring. He's a good worker, good wrestler, but he always needed some character or something. And promoters always gave him ring name. He went with it.
You know, when he was the Dragon Master in NWA/WCW right there, 89, 90, I didn't know that was Kendo Nagasaki. He looked so different.
Because he didn't have that hair anymore. He shaved his hair, and he was losing hair, so might as well he shaved it, right?
Yeah, he shaved it a little bit heavier, but yeah, I didn't realize.
Yeah, and then he walked backward into the ring.
Yes.
Like a hitman, yeah. The bodyguard or a hitman or somebody, you know?
And speaking of stereotypes, you know, that was the time where, Tully and Arn are gone, and it's instead of the Horsemen, they had the JTEX Corporation because, you know, Japan.
Oh, with Hiro Matsuda?
Yeah, because you got, you know, the Japanese were buying everything up, and they were taking over the whole country. And so.
I remember
played,
that.
Yeah, they played
That's
out.
Pretty much Dusty Rhodes' idea, right?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, was he already gone by then? I don't know.
Because bad guy Japanese corporation manager Hiro Matsuda even had the wrestling match against Dusty Rhodes at the time.
Yeah.
So he was back from WWF then.
Yeah, the JTEX Corporation. Ah, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And being Dragon Master, the Hitman, you almost never had to do the promo. Kendo Narasaki never had to do the promo. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Somebody would be doing an interview for you. You just gotta go in the ring and work. He did just that, right?
Yeah. If I were to guess, I'll bet you the Dragon Master maybe came from Ole Anderson, like Shock Master, and there was always like Master.
Yeah,
Blasters
that was like the period, the time that NWA/WCW people tend to forget.
With good reason.
Yeah. But he worked, you know, so he was always like starting from 1976, Amarillo days with Tenryu, you know, Calgary, the NW Tri-State, and, you know, Louisiana, he went up to Canada, Calgary, Puerto Rico, he even went through Central States, Kansas, and Dallas, Florida, or Tennessee, and up in Oregon. He worked. I wouldn't say every single territory, but a lot of territories, you know. And then there's nothing like that now, you know, this big company now, right? Or WWE, of course, but the AEW runs television and doesn't do the house shows. The television you can watch from all over the world, but it's not territory. So it's Kendo Nagasaki is the type of wrestler who actually traveled around the world and really, you know, stayed in territory like a year at a time, 6 months to a year or a couple years at a time. He just did what old-fashioned journeyman wrestler would do. Maybe one of the last ones.
Yeah, when you think about it, yeah.
You know?
Because, I mean, the territory is pretty much done by the time he's the Dragon Master, so yeah.
Yeah, and also he had the hands on, you know, young Keiji Muto, you know, for his very first, you know, 1 year stay in Florida. He probably couldn't have done it alone, you know. Kendo Nagasaki Sakurada was there for him for the one whole, you know, the 4 year. And when he went back to, you know, Keiji Muto went back to Puerto Rico. I mean, long trip for the second time in 1987, 1988, before he became Great Muta. He was in Puerto Rico with him too, you know. Then Muto went to Dallas for a while, then went to NWA Crockett, WCW, you know. The rest is history. So Sakurada played actually not well known, but very, you know, strong role in Keiji Muto's development, don't you think?
Have you ever talked to Muto about...
Muto made public comment as of yesterday. Yeah. A lot of people are making public comment. This time, was okay, I will jump a little bit. Sakurada's death was represent today's media, that his death initially came from his friends posting something on social media way before any, you know, Yahoo News or any sports, you know, media or Tokyo Sports or anything got on, you know. People did not know much about this. Sakurada himself was a pretty private person, and he was found in his apartment, the day after he, you know, passed away, and he had a pacemaker put in 2013, and that wasn't working well, so he was going to have another operation to have, you know, a new pacemaker put in sometimes this year. He says, no, I don't want to have another operation or something like that. And then he was a very private person, and his death news came from social media, and little by little traveled on social media way before any Japanese news media, sports media got on it. And the way Japanese media like Yahoo News or Tokyo Sports or Nikkan Sports or other sports outlet, that's when it gets really interesting. They thought it was, you know, rumor first, right? But see, these small news travel to states, and Cauliflower Alley Club, put the news on their social media, like as of yesterday or so. Cauliflower Alley Club confirmed that. What? Mm-hmm. You know, so they did not take, you know, social media information as a news. But they thought it was confirmed by California, that the Cauliflower Alley Club in California has nothing to do with the real news, right? They posted on social media too, through Japanese social media. But the Japanese the sports media thought Cauliflower Alley Club confirmed the news so they can print it. Isn't that interesting or what?
You know, I'm sure that whomever on the Cauliflower Alley Club, you know, got the news from a reputable source. But yeah, that's...
Yeah. Sakuraba passing before any of these Japanese news, you know, news, the sports tabloid, you know, reported anything on it. And they came, you know, went through the social media, went all the way to America, and the Cauliflower Alley Club sort of confirmed it. Now Japanese sports outlet can't print it because they confirmed it. It's just strange way to, you know, of traveling this information. Very unique case, I think.
He was a Florida heavyweight champion. I mentioned that. He held the Tag Team Champions. He held the AWA Southern title, a brief run with Jerry Lawler. Is the North American Championship, NWA Big Time, would that be Detroit with Mr. Hito?
NWA Big Time, wow. Mr. Hito, is it Detroit? I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know.
Big Time sounds like either Detroit or, I don't know, someplace
NWA
else.
NWA American Tag Team Championship.
That's Dallas. That's
is that
Dallas.
Dallas? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it is Dallas. Okay. There it is. Yeah, because I guess Dallas. They were the American titles. Yeah, that's Dallas.
Right, before they were called World Class.
Yeah.
Oh, Big Time Wrestling. Dallas was also Big Time Wrestling before he was World Class.
Yeah, I just naturally think of Detroit, but you're right.
Yeah.
He held the Pacific Northwest.
A lot of
places
called it Big Time Wrestling, even San Francisco, you know?
Well, everybody called it Big Time Wrestling. It's sort of, you know.
Oh, that's also cliche, right?
Yeah, for a lot of people,
places, there was the American heavyweight title and the U.S. heavyweight title and all these things.
almost the same way that non-fans call all wrestling WWE. Non-fans back in the day would call it big time wrestling.
Big time wrestling. Yeah, big time wrestling. Big time wrestling. I like it, though.
Heck yeah. He held the NWA Pacific Northwest Tag Team Championship with Colonel DeBeers. They were sort of a team for a while. We mentioned Stampede, USWA, and you mentioned Puerto Rico and the Texas Wrestling Federation. So he held a lot of titles in a lot of places.
Yeah. Local, but he was always main eventing in different places. Yeah.
They're
so
local,
a lot of things about him was not known, you know?
They're local, but I mean, those are all the big time regional federations. Those aren't the small places.
Yeah, I know. It was pretty big in their own rights at the time, yes.
I mean, it's big-time wrestling, after all.
So, like we said, you know, Tenryu was a side A of this vinyl record, and he really took the B side of it, you know, and he had his good run, you know. He had his freedom. He went places, you know. He experienced American lifestyle and American wrestling and the life of professional wrestlers more so than the most Japanese wrestler would do, right?
You know, when you talk about I love the A and B side, when Baba kind of cut him loose, there wasn't any animosity. They still liked him, right?
No. Yeah, but they didn't have immediate plan for him, you know. If once you're in America, you know, you're free to go anywhere and spend time. I'll call you when I call you or something, right? Yeah. Probably Giant Baba didn't think much about it, you know, at the time.
Does Muto give him any credit for things that he learned?
Yeah. As he made, you know, public comment. Tenryu made a public announcement yesterday. Onita made public announcement yesterday. They did the Tengang salute at the Big Japan Pro Wrestling Show today. And
do you happen to recall what Tenryu said?
They met when they were in sumo wrestling, very young. We went to America together, and we weren't working together for a long time, but we reunited together in SWS 1990. You know, when Tenryu left All Japan to form SWS, that Kendo Nagasaki was one of the first ones to join that group, so they met again. They worked together. SWS went under maybe just in 2 years or so. Tenryu formed another group, WAR. Kendo Narasaki formed NOW, so it went separate way. But Tenryu wrote the note that announced it yesterday that Sakurada was always in his mind, and he was friend. Nice, huh?
It's very nice.
Yeah, because they met when they were, 15? You know, they're both 70, you know?
That's pretty remarkable. What about Muto?
Muto said all the things he'd done when they were together in Florida, and just forever grateful, yeah, for his days. And they actually worked, you know, against each other in New Japan Ring back in 86 or 87. Then they were together again in Puerto Rico, you know, traveling together. Yeah. So they were friends, you know.
Okay.
Well, Sakurada is much older than Muto, though. But, yeah.
Forgive my ignorance. I don't know a lot about Big Japan, but it says here that he formed Big Japan Pro Wrestling. Is he a founder? Is it the
part
same?
The owner was always Great Kojika.
Yeah.
But he was there to be a top talent and also train young boys.
And it's the same Big Japan that's around today.
Yes. Well, this is ups and downs and management change and all these things. And there were reasons that he left, but he was a founding member of Big Japan. Yes. And he helped SPWAF group. It's called Social Pro Wrestling Federation. That is another independent. And also he helped Onita's FMW one, you know, one or two tours that they work against each other in death matches. And he even helped IWA Japan too. And he worked all these independents that the independent group, you know, was forming. See, up until 90s, there was always Anthony Inoki's New Japan and Giant Baba's Old Japan. There's two major companies, right? But after UWF School of Wrestling and Onita's style FMW, you know, typical independent groups, that there were a lot of independent groups, you know, starting out in 90s, and Sakurada had a lot of, you know, lot to do with this, like a formation of this group and trained young people, the people we don't even know, you know. Yeah, so he didn't really publicize it because he was that kind of guy, you know.
Do you think he's kind of inspirational in the sense that he wasn't the picked guy, but he just kept right on going, didn't get mad at anyone, stayed friends with everybody, just did what he did, and had a successful career in life all on his own?
I think so. Yeah, yeah. And he had long run in America. He had long run in Japan too. So now that the you know, he's passed away, that we are learning more about his legacy. You know, look back, hindsight, he has done a lot. You know,
you can actually take something, I think, from his life and everything we talked about today.
Yeah, yeah. So he was actually a pretty major, you know, that influence in a lot of things that happened all these years, you know. And he was a really humble person that he didn't really, you know, brag about it, you know. And he was making appearance for this, you know, Tokyo Con and, you know, other fan fest kind of thing up until last week. He was signing autographs until last week. You know, that's why a lot of people thought it was rumor that somebody started that Kento Narasaki has passed away, and people didn't believe him for, you know, one, you know, a day. And then little by little, you know, news start coming, not the news, but the people's post, you know, his friends post on social media, and little by little, this must be true. And then none of these major sports, you know, pages and sports tabloid, it really covered it, you know, until it became more public, you know. And it was just like Sakurada's personality, you know. Does that make sense?
In a lot of ways, it's very appropriate, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. But now he's already missed.
Do you have any personal memories or thoughts that you haven't shared yet? You didn't know him well, but...
No, not as much as I, you know, I didn't spend nearly as much time, you know, like I did with, like, Masa Saito. But, yeah, Kendo Narasaki was like, he had this scary old-fashioned wrestler's aura. But you don't, you know, it's like you don't talk to him. You just say hello and you leave it at that, you know. And you know, keep your mouth shut kind of guy, you know. That type of aura, he was always in a dressing room where he doesn't say much. And, he, you know, and all the young boys say yes sir, no sir kind of thing. And but he had this soft spot that at the Big Japan Dojo, he always cooked, you know, because he liked cooking. He, coming from a sumo background, he is a lot like Killer Khan. Those two argued over who started, you know, like who started first. No, I was there first. No, I was there before you. I was there before you. They don't even remember. It was all happening like in spring of 1971. Killer Khan, Sakurada, both former sumo wrestler, wanted to be professional wrestler. They all went to JWA Dojo. They were big enough. They quickly, you know, debuted, and they don't remember who came first. And they argued over it. No, I was there before you. No, I was there before you. That was really funny. Both over 70, you know?
I thought I read something on The Observer somewhere. did he have a restaurant that was also connected to Killer Khan's restaurant?
No, he had his own restaurant, but he closed down. You know, it was not in Tokyo. And he had heart, you know, problem. And like I said, he had, you know, pacemaker put in 2013, I believe. So it's been like 6-7 years that he had heart problems. You know, he closed down his restaurant. He, you know, worked regular job, you know, last year or so, and didn't know much, you know, people didn't know much about him. But he was always willing to come to the fan fest thing. And now that he's a little older and a little more friendlier, you know, with fans, and we shared a lot of good stories because people wanted to know what happened with Baba Inoki back in 1972. And he was there as a young boy. So he had a lot of good story to share, you know, and he was there when Sakaguchi left the JWA and joined with Inoki in 1972. He was there. Until the dying day of JWA, he had story to share. He, that the remaining of JWA young boys didn't know where to go, but somebody, you know, told them to go with Baba, and Baba took all those young, you know, nine wrestlers, and Sakura was among them, and, you know, he had story to share, you know. Isn't that interesting? He was like a very few eyewitness, you know, remaining eyewitness from those historical events.
I'm really glad you've shared this story. I think This is one of my favorite episodes that we've done.
Okay. Yeah, because he was, in hindsight, yeah, he's witnessed, I mean, he had a lot of experience, of course, and he had his long run as an active wrestler. He worked both Baba and Inoki, you know. He saw independent group forming, you know, and he witnessed a lot.
He witnessed a lot. He believed in himself, even though he was the B-side of the single. He went on his own and had a great career. He didn't alienate anybody. He was welcomed back when it was time. And he helped others, you know, who were below him or lower than he was on the totem pole. So, you know, it sounds like he lived a pretty full life.
Hardcores always love B-side better in the record, right?
Another great analogy. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so he's more important than most people thought. Yeah, let's leave it at that.
When you started this show, obviously you knew all of this, but had you put all of this together in your mind, laid it out for yourself?
I'm just talking top of my head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when you put it all out there, it's like I said, it's very inspirational.
Really?
I think so.
Because I watched Kendo Narasaki or Dream Machine or Chan Cheng or Dragon Master or Mr. Sakurada, all tape from Calgary. I've seen his work both in stateside and in Japan. When Rambo Sakurada had a single match against Bruiser Brody in 1985 at the Korakuen Hall, I was right there too. He was wearing wig. See, that was right after his Kendo Narasaki gimmick, but the Rambo Sakurada had long hair, and he was really a wig, you know, and Bruiser Brody tossed him onto the rope. He was, you know, like holding his wig, running to the rope. That's probably why he didn't want to do it again, you know. And also, it was the very first tour Bruiser make sure that Bruiser Brody come off like Bruiser Brody. He was willing to do that for him.
Kazuo Sakurada.
This was a good episode.
I think so. Yeah, thank you. Excellent storytelling, excellent biography, and you know, obviously a lot to work with. But I think that Kendo Nagasaki literally just became one of my favorite wrestlers of all time.
That's good. Yeah. And let's go back and you know, type up Kendo Narasaki and Mr. Sakurada on your computer and search on YouTube. We will find old matches of Kendo Narasaki or Dragon Master or Chen Cheng from Dallas. A lot of old matches like people overlooked, you know?
Well, I hope everybody listens to this show. And even though he has left us, hopefully people will no longer overlook him. Thank you so much for this. This was great.
Okay, good. All right.
Where can people connect with you on social?
Okay. Fumihiko Dayo, FUMIHIKODAYO, Fumihiko Dayo on Twitter, or just find me Fumi Saito on Facebook.
And you can follow
me. Message me first. I'll friend you right away.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Jim Valley. But what an excellent episode. Share this with people. Let them know. This is the kind of stuff Fumi talks about each and every week on Pacific Rim. So until next time.
So long from Tokyo.